Welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that gives you insights and resources on how to live a more courageous life. We'll be looking at men, the current state of masculinity, and how to create a more inspiring narrative for all men. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. Hope you're all doing well. America has always and will always be built on and fortified by civic involvement, and this has been true throughout our history. However, we the people have gotten just a bit flabby here, haven't we? We seem to have forgotten that sleeves rolled up is the American way, regardless of political orientation or philosophical leanings. Some of it really isn't our fault, not really anyways. We've not been educated as to the importance of this local involvement, and a sort of resignation and cynicism has slowly taken over the American mindset, that my involvement really doesn't make a difference since there's so much power and corruption at the top. The establishment is hoping that this continues to be our perspective, as this will keep any restorative movement for the American Republic at bay. For what is good for we the people and our constitutional republic is almost never in the interests of the ruling elite. Have you noticed that? I love what my guest talks about today when she mentions her grandfather who fought at Normandy. She reflects on how can she honor her grandfather's sacrifice and honor her nation by continuing to serve. It's a great question right now. How can I help this nation that has done so much for me and my family? Lady Liberty has been under siege from those that wish to do her and her people harm. What can I do to come to her aid? In 2024 and beyond, this might be the most important civic question that we can ask of ourselves. Let's go sit around the fire with my guest today, a friend, a mom, and a proud and involved American. Enjoy the interview. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Jolie Lansdowne. Jolie is a wife, a mother who homeschooled her kids for 20 years, a local business owner, and a civil servant who serves as the legislative district chair of the 34th District right here in King County. She's a woman who believes that engagement in local government is one of the most effective ways we can impact positive change for our next generation. Here is my interview with Jolie Lansdowne. All right, I'm here with Jolie Lansdowne. Proud American and patriot, mom Jolie Lansdowne. Jolie, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's so great to be here. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I've been so looking to speak with you. You and I have made a new friendship. We both were involved locally on the platform that we created for the GOP in King County. We'll talk more about that as we get going. But I was just really excited to have you on. And I guess just to start, just give the listeners a background of kind of where you're from, how big is your family, you know, what types of things have you done for work just to get us started?
Yeah, I love that. I was just born and raised right here in Burien, south of Seattle, went to Highline High School, grew up there. I've always been a business-minded gal, even from a young age. I started my first business at 11. I did breed preservation in 4-H with fox terriers. And then I had another business I started at 13, designing some clothes for a store downtown Seattle. And I moved to Los Angeles at 19 and got a degree in garment production and worked in that industry for 10 years. And worked my way back to Seattle, back home, and worked in restaurants and the hospitality industry for another 10 years. And then I had my two sons. And for the next 20 years, I worked as a real estate broker, primarily with builders and developers and the Seattle Zoning Code. I had multiple rental properties, and I was an intentional Section 8 housing landlord. And so that was my main career while I raised my sons. I ended up going through a divorce, and I was a single mama for some of those years. And all the while, though, I homeschooled them. So it was a really great career to balance homeschooling them, a lot of freedom in it. And that's the short version of what I did. 15 years ago, I re-met my high school crush and we got married. We blended our family. So we raised five kids through all the teenage years. They were young when we connected. And so that's probably my greatest, you know, my most joyful, greatest victory. Our kids truly all love each other. We've got five of them. We have an amazing family. And so I'm very grateful.
That's a fantastic story. And I didn't know this until I spoke with you recently, but so you were a liberal, you were like a Kennedy Democrat, correct? And then there was a journey much like mine. You know, I'm a Gen Xer, and you know, I think, and then I'll let you speak. I think for me, you know, I was raised in kind of a working class atmosphere during the Reagan years. And so, you know, I grew up kind of Republican, and, you know, everybody loved Reagan back then. And it was very this restoration of American pride, you know, during the Olympics. I mean, it was a really great time to be a young person in America. We weren't being trained to hate the country or any of that. It was like we were really proud of what we represented. But then when I went to college, I started to become, you know, more of a liberal. My friend group was more liberal. I was starting to read a lot about liberal idealism and progressive ideas. And that started to shape it. So that kind of put me in the camp of traditional liberals, Kennedy liberals. But that was fine for a long time. I lived in New York City, you know, that city's largely liberal. I never thought about leaving until all of the woke Trump, like everything, like the Trump derangement syndrome, all the woke stuff that started happening, that I was like, are they going along with this? How is this? You know, it started to defy common sense for me and just my own inner knowing. I was just like sniffing BS. And so I was like, where is people that maybe are on to, you know, what's going on? And that had me drifting more towards libertarians and that camp. So that's kind of my short version of how I, you know, did that. What was your story in terms of, you know, being a traditional liberal, and now you're identified either as a conservative or a libertarian? I don't want to speak for you, but yeah.
Yeah, I totally resonate with your story. I was actually raised a super, super Democrat. I had an engaged mom that, you know, I learned a lot or a fair amount about civics and just being engaged in the process. I don't want to say a lot, but a little. Like, it wasn't a non-conversation in our home. It was very Democratic, and I just, you know, I didn't really question it. It seemed good, and voted, you know, all in my teens, 20s and 30s as a Democrat and a JFK Democrat, you know, and I had my first son at 30. And I would say that's kind of when I noticed a shift in how I began to see things. I started to care more about things like legacy and healthy systems that and not just government, but like in all things that were long living and sustaining, like food or education or things that, you know, I just began to look at things differently. And it was sort of more in my spirit before it was in my brain, if that makes sense. I just, things didn't really sit right. And once I had kids, I just began to look at things differently. So that was probably the shift. And I noticed, you know, things were labeled one thing, but they meant another thing, whether we're talking about, you know, education or food or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I just began to, it got me very curious to find, I always have loved just finding the truth about really anything, you know, the Discovery Channel or just whatever. I think truth is fascinating. And so I began to just research and engage and kind of educate myself on the questions that I had. And I began to realize that most of what I thought was Democrat and what Democrats stood for was actually Republican and conservative values, you know, things like free market economy or, you know, peace through strength or free speech or, you know, just even the freedom to teach my children as I homeschooled my sons, just, you know, that journey. And so that's sort of when it switched for me. And I slowly, it wasn't fast, it wasn't overnight, I slowly migrated, you know, and this was maybe 10 or so years before a lot of us woke up recently.
So it sounds like yours was kind of a drip, gradual, just a little, yeah. a little bit at a time. I think I had maybe a little bit more of a, I don't want to say dramatic, but I when I saw the reaction when Trump won the presidency, and I didn't vote for him in 2016, that the hysteria that was being stirred up in liberals when he got elected, and it didn't stop. And there was a part of me, I think that was my aha, my light bulb moment, that I was being played, because I was like, he hasn't even done anything yet. Like, you know, I've never seen a reaction like this to somebody that just got elected. Like, usually a normal reaction would be, okay, we're pissed off. And then it calms down and they're like, okay, well, let's see what he does. There was no let's see what he does from the media. And that to me was the alarm bell, where I was like, step back, get neutral, and just watch and observe and witness and just see what's going on, because there's a good chance you might be plugged into something and you're being played. So just step back and just observe what's happening. And that was really the start for me. It was just my own kind of discernment of, like, you know, when you get that like sense of like, something's not right here. Let me change my perspective a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that thing started to sort of accelerate for me as well around 2016, 2017, where same situation. I began to observe a lot of what culture was, you know, reacting to and feeling strongly about. And, you know, I'm already sort of questioning what I think and have believed. And I think that was an accelerator for a lot of people.
Absolutely. You know, and then you've been involved in local politics, but I get a sense that maybe that's not something that you were setting out to do. I don't know if it's really anything that anybody ever sets out to do, because, I mean, let's be honest, like, it doesn't matter if you're right, center, or left. You know, most people don't want, they're just like, oh God, I just don't want to get involved, right? There's this kind of, I don't even want to call it propaganda, because it's not. I just think people think that it must be enormously frustrating to be involved in politics, so I'm not going to get involved, right? That I think there's a lot of people that are really smart and would have things to contribute to the conversation, but they don't. Either they feel like they're too busy, or they're just like, oh my God, I don't want to be around this group, let's say, right? And so they sit out. But so I wanted to ask you, and then I'll weigh in just a little bit, like, what got you off the sidelines from somebody that maybe hadn't envisioned yourself getting involved in local politics?
Yeah, absolutely. Was not something on my radar. In 2019, I finished homeschooling my son. So they were graduated. That was like the end of a big chapter in my life. And I paused my broker's license. I wanted to step away and just do some things that I'd been wanting to finish. I'd written curriculum for my sons and others over the years. And so I wanted to finish writing some of that. And part of that story or in that season, I was also working with my grandfather's journal. He left me his journal from World War II. He fought in the war. He left at 20 years old, landed on Normandy. His story of sacrifice is compelling, and just what he sacrificed for the freedoms that I walk in today really impacted me. And I began to ask myself, you know, what does service look like for me in my generation? It you know, was at the same time we began to see a lot of things feeling like they were on fire, you know, and I just began to really be sensitive to ways that I might engage in a way that I could leave the same freedoms for my children and my grandchildren. So I just really began to look around, and I heard something about this thing called a PCO, and I became a PCO. I didn't know what that even meant. And you know, there, if somebody listening doesn't, it just stands for precinct committee officer. It's the smallest section of government in our county government in our country. And I just sort of began. And it was a learning journey. So I became a PCO. I did that for about a year. And that's just like, you're the information desk at the library for your little, maybe two block area in your community, mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, helping people know about candidates or register to vote. And there's some other things. And within about a year, I became the vice chair. And then I became the legislative district chair, and which I currently am the legislative district chair in the 34th district. And that's just sort of like the information desk at the library for a bigger group of people. So I serve the 220 precincts within the 34th district. So mm-hmm. Everybody who's a PCO in the 34th district, which consists of West Seattle, Burien, Vashon Island, and the Port of Seattle, South Pioneer Square, that's kind of all the 34th. So it was a slow journey of just really wanting to get engaged and make a difference and just dive in. And so that's sort of how I began. And, you know, I'll note too, I think most people don't like even the word politics or the idea of politics. And I had a real aversion to it myself. And as I got in, I began to understand that there's politics and there's governing. And governing is very different. And I often think of, you know, The Sound of Music, Julie Andrews. You know, we've all seen this movie. She comes in and she makes sure everybody's fed, everybody has clothes, even if she has to make them out of curtains, you know, everybody's heard, she's fun. It's just a healthy, restorative environment. And that's the heart of a governess. And I think governing is very much that. It's just when we're in government, we're extending that, you know, even sort of parental heart over just a larger family, a larger community. And government is beautiful and balanced and restorative. And I think a very different thing than politics lots of times. So
absolutely. You know, I think most people too, they think that there's no power on the ground level at PCO, right? There's probably an inverted where they're like, well, the governor has power, or the senators, that's who makes, you know, the big waves, and what is the local, you know, PCO or school board. But it's super empowering to serve. One of the things I think that, and you know, I got involved. Lisa's the LD chair of LD 32. So she's also involved. And I was just feeling sheepish reading these kind of wake up calls from like these 4-star generals who are saying, look, there's a lot of things happening in the nation right now. We need people that care about the country, regardless of their political orientation. We need people that care about the nation to step up and raise their hand and start to serve. There's a ton of vacant PCO positions all over the nation. There's school boards if you're worried about education. I mean, I felt sheepish going, well, I'm just going to do a podcast. Now, I know my podcast serves, but I'm like, I need to do better than that on the local level. And so I think that, and then I've only been a PCO for a year, but I got a chance to serve on the platform for the King County platform for the GOP with you leading. And what a gift that was. And what a, for me, a validating experience that you can make a big difference even at the local level. You're not just sitting there twiddling your thumbs. There's a ton of ways you can raise your hand and say, hey, let me help with that. But I wanted to talk specifically about your leadership. By the way, I know you don't like the praise and you don't like to be singled out, but your leadership leading that platform creation was astounding. Like I was watching you just kind of amazed at how skillful, because there's a lot of people don't know this, but there's not just one group in the GOP. I mean, you have MAGA people, you have moderates, you have people that have just come over from the left. So there's a whole bunch of voices vying to say, this is what we're about. And which was really satisfying to see. I think I would have been more bored had it all been one group. It was more satisfying and more, you know, American, let's say, to see all kinds of people vying on issues. And no, I don't think it should say that. I think it should say this. So I wanted to give you a chance to just say, what was that experience like having to lead, not having to lead it, but you got to lead it, but I'm sure there was times when you're like, whoa, this is a lot to handle. I mean, I was watching you going, man, I'm glad I'm just participating and not leading this. And I'm glad it's her steering this because she's doing way better than I ever could at this. But yeah, so what was that like? What did you learn? What was your takeaways?
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you. I learned a lot, and it was such a gift to be on a team with over 20 people from very different backgrounds and mindsets and just experiences, and to come together. It was really just such a treasured experience. You know, I think our strength, I know that our strength is in our diversity when we bring all of who we are to the table and stay at the table. And that was such a wonderful experience. And as we talk about it, I'd love to just pause for a second. I'm realizing and give just a little bit of context because I didn't even know what a platform was, you know, a year ago.
Yeah, me neither.
And I think it's very interesting how the people's voice moves forward. And so in January 13th in King County, there was a pooled precinct caucus. So I talked about those. You know, it's just a meeting where everybody from all the precincts gets together. And if you're a PCO or just a registered voter, you gather at like a local school and in each of the 17 districts in King County, and you get credentialed to be a delegate. And then in February, all those people that got credentialed, they meet again and they vote on who the delegates should end up being. And a delegate is simply a person that carries the voice of the people forward in the process. And so in those two meetings, there were opportunities and invitations for everybody to share essays or scripts or ideas of what they wanted in the King County platform. So when we got to come together then and work on the platform, we received over 740 different scripts and essays and things of what the people in King County really cared about. So we were able to really look in a accurate forensic way, you know, what categories really matter to the people here. And we were able to bring that forward into our platform work. And so that's a piece of how the PCO carries the voice of the people from the, you know, ground level forward in government. So the platform brings us to the platform again. It's a document of general agreement for the people of King County. It's sort of, think of it as the table that we all agree to sit at as people of the Republic or the Republicans. This document is meant, it lasts for 4 years, and it's rewritten every presidential cycle. Every 4 years, it's revised or refreshed as needed. So, so the month of February, Tony, you and I got to work on this platform. And there was two people from each of the 17 districts in King County that met and brought the voice of the people in their district forward at the county level to create this platform. So, so here we get to start working on this platform together. And that was an amazing experience. We added 7 new categories. You know, if we pause for a moment and think about what King County has been through the last 4 years, you know, what America has been through the last 4 years. I think sometimes when you work on the platform, you can kind of copy paste a bunch of them because they don't change that much, you know. But we really realized early on in the game that we needed to rewrite and certainly revisit very thoroughly every single category. And even add some new ones. And, you know, for example, the feedback that we got from the people was that election integrity was by far the most important issue. It came in at over 50%. And the next one was property rights at 15%. And so we realized we really needed to, you know, clarify that and strengthen that freedom in our agreement document. It was an amazing process to go through that. I learned a lot about the top 25 issues in King County, and I learned, you know, the team that we all worked with were amazing group of educated teachers and judges and nurses and, you know, just every group you can imagine. But what I think I'm the most proud of is the agreement and unity on the document that we were able to achieve. We really stayed at the table through uncomfortable conversations and, you know, everybody had different ideas in some ways about how our government should work. And I think that, you know, we lead every section. We say we agree that. And so we really stayed at the table and got agreement on this document. And the other piece is the structure, that the structure of it is, it's built on our founding fathers. We draw this plumb line back to our founding father documents. And it's, this document has a structure of four corners of liberty, wisdom, value, and economy. And so it really holds the test of time in a broad way. You know, it's unified left to right. And then historically we go back and draw this plumb line forward from our founders. And so those are two things, two of the many things we could keep talking about that I'm most proud of this document.
Well, and for me, you know, I didn't know I was going to be working on it, but Lisa was like, that's you, you're the writer, you go work, help with that. And I was really honored to be able to do it. But one of the things to circle back around is, for me, it helped cut through some of the, you know, I want to say, maybe, is it cynicism? It's this kind of reluctance to get involved because, you know, oh, how much of a difference can I make unless I'm going to go all in? But I think that's the wrong way to think about it, because all I did was raise my hand to be a PCO. And then they said, hey, they're doing this platform creation. It'd be good to have you in there. So I did that. And then I got to work on all kinds of really cool stuff, including leading the education plank. And everybody that talks to me and knows me knows that I complain about education and what's happening. My father was in education. He was the business manager in the near the Portland School District, in the Portland School District, Oregon City, for decades. So my family was invested in education, and we've watched it, you know, spiraling downward with all this stuff. And so for me, I've sounded the alarm bell, but this was the first chance I got to sort of say, well, wait a minute, why don't you lend your heart and your ideas and your creativity to this? And, you know, I got a chance to shape, you know, a few topics, but the education one I'm singling out because I was the lead on that. And the final document, even though it wasn't word for word what I had set out for, we edited and we shortened it and we kept cutting it down, and other people had things to say that changed it. I look at the final product and I'm like, your thumbprint is on that education plank big time. And that makes me really empowered as an American to be so new to local politics, but be able to shape something that's really near and dear to me. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. And I loved what you did with that as a homeschool mom and 20 years trying to figure out what education looks like. You know, what are we really going after? I loved what you did with that.
Thank you.
It's so well written. And this is exactly what happens when we get engaged, right? Yeah.
And, you know, I wanted to ask you, too, like what your message would be. I think right now there is a large group of people that they're not sure where they're at. You know what I mean? Like they haven't, maybe they're also former Kennedy liberals and traditional liberals, and all of this crazy stuff from the radical left is, maybe they're going, oh my God, I don't agree with this at all, but I can't agree with those guys because those guys might support President Trump. Like they feel a little lost. They don't. And I think there's this sense that, I know that Trump is polarizing and can be a deterrent for anybody wanting to step into the GOP, because they think everybody in the GOP has got to be MAGA, because that's what they're told. But I can say from working on this platform that, yeah, there was MAGA people that really loved President Trump. There's people that love liberty, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, or maybe they're constitutionalists, but maybe they're not crazy about Donald Trump because maybe they feel like he's a little bit too crass, or maybe they don't feel like he's, you know, if the person's really Christian, maybe they don't feel like he's a good Christian, or maybe they just don't like that he's such a street fighter and says all these things. But there's a lot of people that are in the party that have the same concern for America, let's say. They have their principles and their values, and there's a lot in common with everybody, all Americans, really. We have a lot more in common. It's just the media wants to divide us and continually agitate people to think I'm nothing like that group over there. And I think I was probably guilty of saying, oh, I'm going to be in this group and there's all these, you know, rhinos, or there's this kind of name calling and there's this kind of silo creation. But when you get in there, the working in the platform was a perfect example of there was not just one type of person there. There was people that, you know, probably didn't really like President Trump. They were supporting Haley or supporting DeSantis or maybe even Kennedy, you know. And so I was grateful to see that the American Republic is alive and well, that we can have conversations because we've been encouraged to avoid one another and not have uncomfortable conversations. And here we spent a month having uncomfortable conversations, sometimes with people that agreed with us. It was still uncomfortable, you know? And so I just think we need to exercise that muscle a little more of like civic disagreement. It's okay. I don't hate you because you're for Joe Biden or you used to be or whatever. I guess I wanted to give you an opportunity to just say, like, what is your share for maybe people that feel a little bit like they're jettisoned right now? They don't have a party because, you know, they think Trump standing on one side, I don't want to do that. The crazy wokesters are on this side, I don't want to do that. I guess I could go Kennedy Jr., which probably some of them are going to do. But what would be your message from the inside of the GOP for people that are maybe like, I don't know, what's it going to be like for me?
Yeah, I love that question. I agree with you. Division is tiring. And I think that, you know, we're realizing, all of us are realizing that, you know, we're stepping in our areas, our sphere of influence, and we're just learning how to take better responsibility locally. And that looks different for everybody. I have a favorite quote from the 1776 commission that's at the bottom of my email that says, local government has always been America's laboratory of liberty. And it's, you know, the ground level is where we really connect in diversity of strength and perspective, and that's really the place to get engaged and involved. And, you know, as a homeschool mom, I knew some stuff about the Constitution and the founding, but I honestly didn't know really anything about local government. You know, I'll absolutely admit that I just didn't really know what a PCO was or what these conventions were. You know, I just didn't understand how powerful it was to engage at that level. So I would share to those who, you know, can hear, who are looking for that and looking for what to do, I would just share that you are needed. Anybody who can hear me, you are needed. Your history holds a wisdom for all of us. You know, like I said, our diversity is our strength. Your sphere of influence is unique to anybody else ever. You know, the people who already know you, who already trust you in your, you know, trusted spaces and relationships, and your voice is your vote. And so, you know, when we bring forward who we are fully into the process, it doesn't take much, even just an hour a month. Like, engagement is can really be effective at a pretty small level, especially when we all are doing it. You know, for as an example, you know, my history as a broker, I have understanding about housing in Seattle after 20 years. And so that's something that I can bring to property rights and, you know, the homeless issue and Section 8 housing. I have understanding around that because I worked in that. Or as a homeschool mom, I have understanding around navigating education and that whole system. And so when each person brings just who they are forward, it gives such an opportunity for a stronger government at the local level. So that's what I would share, that good government needs you specifically, who you are specifically. So, yeah.
I love it. Well, and then also one thing I realize, and I think you could probably attest to this too, is they say that, like, there's tons of vacancies for PCO. Like, they're literally just sitting empty. Like, all you have to do is just raise your hand and say, I want to do that, right? It's not like,
yes.
I think people also think like, oh, that does that mean I got to campaign and run? It's not really like that. There's seats waiting to be had for good Americans that say, hey, let me get a little bit involved. Let me add my voice to We the People, right?
Yes, exactly. We have, I think it's a 14% national average of seated PCOs. And hopefully that number's wrong. That's probably an older statistic. Mm. If you think about that, you know, I've got 220 precincts and I have a strong percentage at 40 of them, maybe 42 now, are seated. So that's a huge vacancy, you know, just empty seats. And it's literally taking a seat It's that simple. And this is part of how I think we got to where we're at today. You know, we just didn't realize there was all these vacant seats. And like you said, it's the same for the commissions and boards and school board. There's a lot of positions that are not elected positions. They're just an invitation to come and sit and advocate for your community in, you know, the local government level. And they're just vacant. And so there's a lot of opportunity to get engaged pretty easily.
You know, it's funny that they, you know, education's not about empowering young people. If it was, the subject matter would be a lot different, including this subject, like how there's vacancies in the PCOs and we need young people's voices. That's how we know what the next generation is concerned about. Like, but they don't ever teach them any of that. They don't teach them civics anymore. So you literally have these high school graduates that come out. I was not really joking on another episode recently. I said that, you know, if I go down to the high school, I'm not convinced very many of them are going to be able to tell me about what the Civil War was about, what the Revolutionary War was about, what the Bill of Rights says. Like, I don't think they're being taught that. It's not their fault. But certainly teaching young people about how to be involved and make a difference. And some are going to have a knack for making a positive impact in their communities, you know, but they're just not taught that at all. Which is a shame, which is kind of, you know, what we were talking about on the platform. But I wanted to ask you, of all the things, like, this is it feels, no matter where you're at politically, whether you're involved or not involved, whether you're center, right, left, I think everybody realizes that this is a big year. We're going to know a lot more about what's going on, I think, in the next 8 or 10 months. Those that have been down rabbit holes and done their fair share of reading know that this is a very unconventional war, but a war that and a conflict that we're in with a lot of psyops, a lot of soft techniques and techniques to change the narrative. There's a lot of disinformation out there that people have to weed through and try to find signal amongst all the noise that's being pushed at them. I guess my question to you is, like, what has you most concerned right now? Like, what's the thing that's like, I hope that doesn't materialize, or I hope that that doesn't come to play in the next year. And then on the flip side, like, what has you optimistic right now? What has you feeling like, hey, we're going to come out of this as a stronger nation. We're going to be good. Future generations, we're going to secure their future so that everybody has liberty in this nation. We're not going to go down we're not going to continue down this Marxist communist path. We've recognized the danger and we're taking all these steps. So I guess, both sides, what has you kind of maybe not sleeping all so well at night? And then on the flip side, what has you optimistic right now?
Yeah, gosh, that's a great question. I'll start with most optimistic. I think that, you know, the truth is, like, there's good news. I come with good news. You know, every good person, if every single good person simply cast their vote, every available vote. So if every person cast every available vote, no amount of, coming against good things would have any chance of winning. The truth is that we know statistically that many people don't vote. You know, in some areas, most people don't vote. And so that alone, I think, is really something to look at, because the good news is that if we simply do that one thing, we've already won the battle. We have seats that simply need to be taken. You know, we just step into our PCO seat and sit down, or these other places. There's a lot of open availability, and, you know, numbers wise, whether it's, you know, King County or across our whole nation, we have the numbers to absolutely create better systems and better policies and restore things. It's a matter of, you know, and I'm not even talking about red versus blue. I'm not talking partisan right now. I'm talking a unified America. If we just, as good people who we all want the same things, we want safe neighborhoods. We want to leave our communities better for our children. You know, we all want the same things. We want small businesses to thrive. You know, we all want the same thing. So if we just move forward in unity in that way, in those simple ways, as a county or as a state or as a country, we absolutely win. And so that's what I'm optimistic about. And in the flip side of that, what concerns me, I think the hinge point is just the spirit of discouragement. People feel like my voice doesn't matter. My vote doesn't matter. You know, I pay taxes. I don't see the problem solved. You know, there's a lot of just discouragement in every area. And it makes us, you know, just want to agree with the idea that our vote doesn't matter. And so, you know, we don't get out there and engage in the process. And, you know, the other would be just that spirit of division. I think that's another huge impactor in our culture, you know, that keeps us not staying at the table together in areas that we do agree. So I think those two things have me most concerned, but I'm observing across our nation and even locally that discouragement and division are losing the battle. And we're seeing people move together, just even like on our platform team. We sat at the table with over 20 people with very different ideas about how government should work, what it should do. You know, we were able to remove the wedge issue from our county for, you know, perhaps the first time ever with the way that we wrote the life plank in this document. The way that we wrote that said, you know, it gave room for honesty. You know, I was a candidate in 2022 for the House of Representatives, and I was pretty shredded on that particular issue. And this is a document that says, hey, we're honest that, you know, we don't have it all figured out and we don't all agree within the party, but we're going to work together and stay at the table. And, you know, we understand the current law and we're moving forward to, you know, take care of women. Like it's that staying at the table in unity and encouragement that I think is our winning hand. And so, that's where I would land on that.
Beautifully said. Yeah, I think that's a really great message. I've heard people say, you know, I miss being able to debate. You know, I heard this elderly guy recently. I was in his vicinity talking, and he just said, I used to just disagree with my neighbor over almost everything, but we'd get these like really lively discussions over the fence. You know, he was, you know, and he goes, I miss that. He goes, you know, it wasn't about hating him. We just disagreed on a few things, and it was good to kind of, you know, kind of tussle about it a little bit. It didn't mean that, you know, I didn't think he was a good American, you know. And I'm like, God, we've really been played and divided to the point where we can't have these conversations. My sense is we, the people right now, you know, we're battered and bruised, and we've been sort of sucking air on this, on all the lies and deception and the things that we've grown, that we've been propagandized on. But I think that there's this awakening where people are realizing, hey, if we don't bite on the division, we win. And I do feel like America is blessed by God, and that we are destined to stand for freedom and to lead the world in that. And that, and anything that's not of a higher principle, truth, love, liberty, pursuit of happiness, you know, don't harm another, like just all these just basic principles that I believe most Americans share or would nod if you would say, are these part of your values? I just feel like those win because they're the higher road. So all the conflict and the name calling and the weird news stories that don't have anything to do, all the noise that gets created is not, that's not the high road. That's the low road. And I just think that we cannot be aloof, but I feel like our principles, we the people, regardless of our political affiliation, we the people, our principles, we can band together on the higher principles. We know we know our neighbors. We know our neighbors are not bad people. We know that they're good Americans. We know that they that what we care about and what they care about, it's probably like 95% the same. So it's like, and I think that that's starting to melt away. I think people are starting to see the illusion of division that the media has done their best to try to blare out at us and bite on. That's a long-winded way of finishing that, that little conversation. But I wanted to ask, are you going back to Milwaukee? Are you going to be a delegate back there?
I am.
Oh my God. That's so awesome. I'm so glad you're able to do that. Thank you for going back and representing me. I really appreciate it. And is there any other final thoughts, anything else you'd like to share about what you're up to or any just parting words for our listeners today?
Well, thank you, Tony. I just, you know, I encourage folks to, you know, to get engaged. There's some simple ways we can do that. You know, registering to vote is so simple. Becoming a PCO or just getting behind good candidates, stepping in into meetings and council meetings or education boards, et cetera, at the local level, you know, taking your seat in those positions. Lots of them are open, like we talked about. You can support the voting process with observing, or there's different ways to do that. And, you know, in middle school and high school, especially, I, in hindsight, would, you know, wish I would have incorporated more local government understanding into the curriculum I had for my sons. And I think there's a great opportunity there to get the next generation encouraged and involved. And if people are interested in our platform or registering to vote or becoming a PCO, I have left my website up from when I ran for the House a couple years ago because I'm frugal and it's a good tool. You can click on it's Jolie for the House. And if you just Google that, there's a form there. You can register to vote or become a PCO. You can read the platform that Tony and I, that you and I worked on. And so, yeah, I encourage folks to stay encouraged, get educated, and get engaged.
Beautiful. Well, Jolie, thanks so much for coming on Basecamp for Men and sharing your wisdom and your insights. So appreciate who you are, what you're doing. Thank you. God bless you and your family. Come back anytime as this unfolds. There'll be more to talk about, but just really appreciate you taking time today.
Thank you, Tony. It's been such a joy and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jolie as much as I did. We talked about all the PCO vacancies across the nation, and this is a great opportunity to help in a small, effective way. If you find yourself feeling helpless and upset about what is happening in your city or your neighborhood or your nation, join us as a PCO in whatever state you reside in. Let's put good Americans in those vacancies. It's a great way to help restore America and stand in the principles that are near and dear to you. Thank you, Base Campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors, and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.